The House will come to order. Good morning. Please stand if you're able. Everyone, please stand. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Wisnett.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by Jessica Lamb, who's an instructor at Portland Community College. She's going to be sharing a poem with us. She is a guest of Representative Nolan. Welcome.
Good morning. Small signs. Left alone, the world reverts to a room. I sit in it, thinking about nothing but how to become the door the words enter, the window words reveal, the ear listening for the way trees become trees and green turns into green. Out the window, a cloud drifts slowly, like a whale returning to its feeding grounds. In the blue dark, I can see its spine, reaching all the way to the next town, where the head has already arrived at the end of a long migration, just as the moon opens its cold, patient eye. On the roof, rain repeats itself. It keeps coming, down and down, until even the trees appear to liquefy. Listening means bearing more than I can bear, and yet more keeps coming. I open my mouth to cry out, and a cloud of mold spores floats from my lips. The only answer is to love small signs of life. Thank you.
Thank you very much for honoring us with your presence today. Courtesies, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and colleagues. Jessica Lamb, our poet today, was raised in Vermont's Northeast Kingdom. She went on to receive a master's degree in Italian literature from Stanford University before she and her husband Will and son Hayden found their home in Portland. She has taught writing for many years through the Northwest Writing Institute, Portland Community College, and the Literary Arts Writers in the Schools program. I am honored to have her as one of my bosses and ask you to help me make her feel welcome in our capital.
Further courtesies, Representative Greenlick. Oh, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to introduce you to one of my constituents who is here. Mr. Knowles, if you could please come to the aisle. And please extend courtesies of the House to Paul Knowles, Jr. He's a businessman from my district, interested in coming to hear the debate around the olive oil standards bill. And thank you very much for coming. Please offer him courtesies of the House. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further courtesies, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce today a dear friend of mine, Richard Page, who's up in the side gallery. He's the treasurer of the Northwest Health Foundation that we hear about occasionally here. Has been a friend for a long time. He's with us today because he's a descendant of the Jory family, for which Jory Hill was named down in South Salem, and is here to watch us discuss the extent to which Jory soil should be named as Oregon State soil a bit later this morning.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I proudly wear red today because I would like to introduce to you Lebanon Strawberry Festival Court today. Ladies, please stand. These are the princesses from Lebanon, And they were, and I'm going to introduce them in a minute, but they were brought up here today in the Strawberrians limousine driven by John Jenkins. And they're escorted by Jeanette Wells and Carrie McGeehee. You ladies get to stand too, even though you don't have the red on. But our princesses are Emily King, Sage Gerson, Amy Bloom, Maddie Phillips, and Megan Enright. And please welcome them all. Lebanon Strawberry Festival has a long, long tradition in Lebanon and is the home of the world's largest strawberry shortcake, and that will all be taking place the first weekend in June. So please welcome them.
Further courtesies? Seeing none. Verification of quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Barker. Representative Gelser. There's Representative Gelser. Is here. Representative Comp. Also, Representative Comp. One last time, Representative Barker. Quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bills 577, 590, 839, 944, 70, 72, 269, 309, 310, 566, 580, 664, 731, 735, 850, 874, 915, 916, 970, House Bill 5,001, 5029, and 5036. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that he has signed House Bills 2261, 2303, and 2762.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Representative Schaffler.
Mr. Speaker, I move we adopt the committee report.
Representative Schaffler moves the adoption of the committee report on House Bill 2699. To your motion.
I'm going to take another one on the chin today for workers in Oregon. Thank you for indulging me, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2699 expands the definition of public works to include a construction, reconstruction, or major renovation project for a privately owned road, highway, building, structure, or improvement of any type that is located in an enterprise zone, consists of or sited on real property for which a qualified business has received a property tax exemption under the state's enterprise zone program and has a projected cost of at least $5 million. Establishes that the enterprise zone sponsor or sponsors are to pay the fee to the Bureau of Labor and Industries, BOLI, as required under prevailing wage rate law and when the fee is to be paid. Sets a required fee at $5,000, clarifies how the fee is to be divided in circumstances at which there is more than one sponsor, establishes an operative date for 90 days after the effective date of the measure, declares emergency effect upon passage, folks. If the state or any local government or anyone is going to be using my tax dollars to incent investment in this state, and by the way, no one has worked harder to retain and attract investment in this state than me. If we're going to encourage people to come here and invest, and if we're going to create tools for them to invest here, I want them creating and providing opportunities for family wage jobs and benefits, not low-paying jobs, but good-paying jobs where people can own a home, live a good life, have a pension, send their children to the dentist, send those same children to college. This is a good bill. I urge your vote.
In the absence of a motion to substitute the minority report for the committee report, I order the bill be advanced immediately to the third reading calendar.
And then we go to the next one.
First reading of House bills. In compliance with House Rule 9.15, Subsection 2, after the motion to substitute has been decided, the bill shall be further considered in the calendar of the third reading. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2699, relating to application of prevailing wage rates and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2699. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Everything I just said over again.
Further discussion. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question for the carrier.
Question for the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Thank you. In your opening remarks on the
motion to,
you referred to businesses coming here that would provide family wage jobs. Can you tell me what the hourly rate is for a family wage job?
Well, Mr. Speaker, the prevailing wage varies around the state depending on your locality, and I don't have those rates in front of me.
Follow up, if I may.
Follow up. Does the speaker yield?
Yes, I do.
He does?
Just clarification. Eric. Your opening remarks were family wage, not prevailing wage. Is there a difference between a family wage and a prevailing wage?
One could argue there is, but and to your first question as well, I think someone should be able to make a living and be able to have a family, be able to pay for a home, be able to buy a car, get themselves to and from work, have some health insurance, be able to have a retirement, and hopefully have enough money to send their kid to college. I don't think that's asking too much in this community. And you know, Mr. Representative, the debate, and this is to the question, the debate used to be, how are we going to help workers achieve all those goals? Now the debate has become, do we help workers or not? This bill is about, in my opinion, is about helping workers.
Clarification, if I may.
Clarification.
Thank you. Is there a number that allows all those things to happen in a family wage, you refer to family wage job, is there a number?
Not
an
one
hourly rate?
Not one that I could directly point to right now off the top of my head, no.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
To the bill.
To the bill.
That's the answer.
Colleagues, there was a lot of discussion and testimony in committee about this particular bill in front of us today. And as we have facing us over 265,000 unemployed people today, we need to really consider what we do in this building that will encourage, in this global competitive environment, that will encourage existing businesses to stay here and to expand, as well as new businesses to come to the state of Oregon. Colleagues, this is a tool, the Enterprise Zone. This is a tool that allows us to be competitive in this environment and to take or change that tool in a way that it makes it even just a little teeny bit less competitive is the wrong direction to take the state of Oregon when we have the second highest unemployment in this country. The slightest move the wrong direction. Colleagues, we heard testimony in committee here in Salem. The Sanyo Group is coming to Salem. It's going to bring 200 jobs. And yes, there is a number to those jobs and how much they will be paying. I think it's around $50,000 average that those Sanyo jobs will bring to here, to this community, 200 of them. We heard testimony that the local workers on that job are being paid union scale, high wages without this bill today, and they are local workers. I question, why do we risk moving just a little bit the wrong direction when we are facing these tough times in the state of Oregon? I urge your no vote today.
Further discussion, Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I think it behooves us to understand what an enterprise zone is. Several of your municipalities within this state has an enterprise zone. And what that is, it's an allowance to defer taxes upon a building and or an expansion of a business. Now, what we've created is a tool for us to compete with such places as South Carolina, Arkansas, North Carolina, the Midwest, and other entities as well, every place actually in the United States. What we're doing here is we're taking that tool out of our box. With the enterprise zone, you as a business, if you relocate in the state of Oregon in an enterprise zone, you're allowed a 3-year deferred taxing, as well as if you agree to put on so many people and expand, you're allowed a 5-year shelter. What this boils down to, colleagues, is do you want to lose these jobs, this construction, and this activity to some other state? That's what you're gambling with here. That's what we are gambling with. So the question is, do you want to have 50% of something or 100% of nothing? Over what? And by the way, you have to pay in the 5-year deferred tax. You have to pay a family wage job that's established by your community. So it does provide family wage jobs. Now, having said that, do not get the two mixed up. It will be very difficult for us to ask an entity to come to this state, to come to my municipality, to relocate, to build a manufacturing facility, when in the front end it's going to cost them more than they may even get on the back end. That's what we're doing here. I suggest that we take a good hard look at this. Each and every one of us has municipalities. Some of us don't have enterprise zones, but I know that my particular municipality is a leader in the state with enterprise zones and e-commerce overlays. I also know that 70 to 80% of all labor that are done in my area, in my enterprise zone, are in fact local people. 70 to 80%. That's from Mr. Shiprock that did his homework on it, and I appreciate that information very well. We could amend this and make this very simple by doing first source job seeking. That ensures local people. I think what we're doing here is we're unwinding a tool and making it very difficult for your economic development to go sell your particular area. I caution each and every one of us with this vote. We can look at one thing and think, wow, my tax dollars are being spent and someone else is getting the benefit of it, and I want to ensure that that is done by local people. Well, folks, we are in fact doing that, more so than we think. This may be one of those bills that are looking for a solution. I strongly suggest you take a good hard look at it and think about, do you want to have 50% of something or 100% of nothing, because that's what it may boil down to. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of this bill, and I appreciate the comments. It is important that we remain competitive and try to attract manufacturers and businesses to our state. But we do that in a number of different ways, some with economic development dollars and some through tax abatements and other mechanisms to provide incentives for businesses to locate here. And I'm not speaking against those. Oftentimes those are successful. But frankly, colleagues, we shouldn't be competing by lowering wages of workers in Oregon and by leaving out the construction jobs out of the whole discussion of what's important to our economy. The skilled workers that are in Oregon are essential to building our infrastructure, and we need to protect those skilled workers and the wages that they make. We need to protect those wages as community standards. It's already the policy of the state of Oregon in the prevailing wage laws that contractors compete on their ability to perform work while maintaining community standards, which include health care, which include apprenticeship training, and other benefits, as well as the wage itself. You know, and I'm happy that many of our districts or enterprise zones have been successful, and that some of those construction jobs have paid good wages, sometimes as high or even higher than prevailing wages, when they've been done by union contractors sometimes. But the fact is, it doesn't always happen. And I will point out that we had an enterprise zone that was brought forward and discussed in the committee, the Lowe's Center in Lebanon, where they hired a contractor from out of state, and that contractor brought a whole crew from Southern California who performed work at less than half the community established standard by Boley in the construction field. Our local people sat on the sidelines while that work was being performed by a whole crew from Southern California that, when that job was over, they were laid off and wandering around. Some returned to California, some did not. But it's not right that we will use public dollars, tax abatements, which take our public dollars and give them away, which is a good tool, but allow those public dollars to unfairly undermine the construction workers in the state of Oregon. It's unfortunate that this bill is necessary, that our local jurisdictions that manage these enterprise zones don't stand up and ensure that those construction workers are protected. But that doesn't always happen. I believe it's time for this bill to be passed in the state of Oregon to make sure that we protect all aspects of our economy when we use public dollars to provide incentives to make us more competitive. We shouldn't be competing on the backs of workers. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we do not need to worry about prevailing wage rates running off business in the state of Oregon. In my district, Port Westward is the largest undeveloped industrial site on the Columbia River. Through actions taken by two county commissions in my district, they required prevailing wage rates to be undertaken at the Enterprise Zone. After they took that action, a $500 million worth of construction was brought into my district, into Port Westward. The issues were not what the wage rate is. The issues were the real issues when it comes to recruiting businesses into the state. Is there adequate shovel-ready sites? Is there adequate infrastructure that's either at the site or about to be brought into the site? Is the workforce trained? Are they capable of doing the work, and are there an adequate number of workers? On this last point, the only concern that existed among these companies that brought that $500 million worth of construction into the area was, are there enough workers? Not that we were running them off, but are there enough workers to entertain all the construction that we were bringing into the area? Just downriver from Port Westward, one of the largest paper companies in the state of Oregon, they had put in one paper machine that was done by out-of-state contractors, non-union, non-prevailing wage rates. They had all kinds of problems with that contractor. This particular company that owns the paper mill is the largest privately held corporation in the United States. Up to this point, they had done all of their construction projects across the nation, non-union, non-prevailed. After they had the very significant problems that they did putting in the paper machine, they decided that they were going to go with locally hired labor, union labor. When the project was completed, the only concern that they had was whether Oregon could supply unionized, prevailed labor to every single mill that they had across the United States. The job was done on time, under budget, and at the highest quality standards that company had ever seen. Colleagues, the issue is, who does the best job, who has the best site development, who has the best infrastructure? Prevailing wage rates sets an even playing field for everyone else in terms of wage rates. I urge your support for the proposition. Thank you.
Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I was not going to speak to this bill today, but my friend from the Emerald Empire kind of got my ire up with his anti-worker rhetoric. I frankly agree with almost everything that the good representative from Happy Valley and the good representative from the River District said, and by no means am I an apologist in my opposition to this bill for enterprise zones, and by no means do I think the enterprise zone law in this state may not be broken in some ways. But frankly, I think that this issue is about enterprise zone policy, and we ought to be examining that policy. And we did not look comprehensively at enterprise zones. And in fact, there was an enterprise zone study that was presented to the House Committee on Revenue. I can't remember how many weeks ago it was now, but it was after the initial public hearing on this bill. And so I sat in on that, and frankly, it answered some questions, but left a lot more unanswered for me. And I think that this would be a great topic to take up in the interim and really come up with a comprehensive report on what ought to be done with our enterprise zone policy. Because the $64 million question, or in this instance, the $5 million question, is would projects in enterprise zones
not have happened but for the enterprise zone tax abatement. If they wouldn't have happened otherwise, then it's probably more sound economic development policy. If they would have happened otherwise, then, in my view, it's a subsidy and a giveaway. And we ought to take a different approach with things like prevailing wage and whatnot. I agree with the representative from the River District. I tend to doubt that construction wages are the make or break factor as to whether or not a project moves forward in an enterprise zone here in this state. A lot of the big traded sector projects, they rely on affordable power, access to water, and buildable land. And a regulatory environment that is predictable and bearable. So, now I think we have a lot of agreement. I wanted to explain myself, explain my opposition to this bill, because I think we need to take a more comprehensive look before we start picking at enterprise zone policy. Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
As a former Head Start director, we had a threshold of $2,500 for any project, and we paid prevailing wage. Regardless of what I thought or what it cost, the workers liked it.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? Representative Schaffler, do you yield?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. And I don't want to try to make a direct quote, so I won't. But while chairing the committee in business and labor, you indicated that businesses that don't pay the family wage should plan on leaving Oregon or not come to Oregon. And again, that's not a direct quote, and I'm not trying not to do that. But for planning purposes for businesses, what is that number? I mean, what is the number they need to be paying that you keep talking about?
Thank you, Representative. I would say the fact that you just qualified your statement, I believe, was an attempt to directly quote me, and you misquoted me. What I said was, if you don't want to pay a family wage, if you want to invest in this state, you're going to pay a family wage. Otherwise, go somewhere else. And I still mean that. And I'm not. We just cannot use my tax dollars to attract investment in this state that is not interested in paying the workers of this state a wage that is not enough to raise a family. Now, that varies from family to family. I know what it isn't, and that's minimum wage with no benefits. The Region 3, which is the region we're in right now, Marion, Polk, Yamhill County, the prevailing wage here, and these vary from trade to trade, there's a range, is $14.21 to $31.33, depending on what skill you bring to the job site. That also includes benefits like health care and other fringe benefits. But is there a designated, specific, outlined, nailed-down, specific number saying this is a family wage? I don't have that, but I do know minimum wage is not that, and it depends. It varies from family to family depending on what their wants and needs are.
Representative Hanna.
Follow-up question?
Further questions? The carrier yield.
Yes, I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative.
Welcome.
Would that then indicate that businesses that rely on or provide service and jobs at minimum wage should not come or be in Oregon?
Mr. Speaker, I know my friend from Roseburg knows the answer to that is no. And I will follow up by that by saying I had minimum wage jobs since I was 10 years old, all through college. I had three of them when I was in college. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's good. We need kids. My friend from Albany and I passed a bill allowing kids from 16 and up to get back out there doing those minimum wage jobs so that they can learn a good, solid ethic, work ethic. That is so valuable. These starter jobs are important, very important. A lot of families do still have one, two, three, even four jobs trying to make ends meet, four jobs that are not family wage jobs. If they had a family wage job, they wouldn't have four jobs. They'd only have one job. I know what a family wage job is not, and that is, I don't think you'd get anyone who had minimum wage workers that paid someone $8.50 an hour with no benefits. I challenge you to get one person to come down here and walk into this building and say that's enough to raise a family on. I'm telling you, folks, you can't do it. It don't exist. It ain't true. It ain't real. Now, does that mean we want to close down and ship out all the good businesses that hire minimum wage workers like I was when I was a kid or when I was working my way through college, when I needed a starter job to get going in my work career? Obviously not. That's absurd. I hope that clarifies your question. I hope my answer was clear to you, Representative.
Representative Hanna, anything further? Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shoffler, do you wish to close?
Just in case I'm not made myself clear here today, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank all the questions. I want to thank my friend from the Emerald Empire and my friend from the River District and my friend from the economic hub of Lane County, especially, and my friends from across the aisle with their good, pointed questions. And I couldn't agree more with my friend here about the need for affordable power, access to water, and buildable land, which we've had affordable power in this region, and I'm hoping we keep it that way. I'm worried about that issue. I've said right here for 7 years trying to get access to more water. I couldn't agree more. And I traveled to Asia with my good friend from Medford, and we met some business people that have invested heavily in America while we were in South Korea. And I specifically asked them, they were going to build a plant, and it came down between Oregon and Texas. And I asked them, well, what's the problem? And one of the things they mentioned was not only the access or the availability of building land, but just the process of getting something of that magnitude built in Oregon. But never have I ever heard anything from any investor that says, well, you have prevailing wage law, state, small state, Davis-Bacon Act. I've never heard anyone say that. Because to be quite frank with you folks, all these projects of these size are built at scale already. This just makes it clear that we're going to prevail on these jobs using our tax dollars and make sure workers are getting paid a prevailing wage, and I hope that prevailing wage is a family wage. With that, good bill should pass. I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen? Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Reed votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Berger, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Change my vote from aye to no.
Representative Berger changes her vote from aye to nay. Representative Jensen, off the floor. House Bill 2699A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. First reading of House Bills. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2108 relating to career schools. House Bill 2134 relating to lead-based paint activities and appropriated money. House Bill 2205 relating to civil penalties imposed by Child Care Division. House Bill 2207 relating to Central Background Registry. House Bill 2219 relating to landowner preference tags. House Bill 2604 relating to individually identifiable health information. House Bill 2619 relating to printing of the Oregon Revised Statutes. House Bill 2726 relating to nutritional information for consumers and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2739 relating to motor vehicle dealerships. House Bill 2755 relating to reinsurance. House Bill 2761 relating to soil information. House Bill 2950 relating to code compliance. House Bill 3033 relating to election petitions. House Bill 3090 relating to renewable energy. House Bill 3162 relating to employment discrimination resulting from whistleblowing. House Bill 3175 relating to health professional regulatory boards. House Bill 3204 relating to dental hygienists and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3236 relating to immunizations. House Bill 3279 relating to adult foster homes. House Bill 3343 relating to persons providing alcoholic beverages. House Bill 3379 relating to transportation and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3384 relating to public assistance and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time or pass the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2155 relating to a removal fill permitting program. Allows Department of State Lands to assess one-time fee that covers all fees due for removal or fill permit valid from more than 1 year.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2155A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. House Bill 2155A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2156 relating to mitigation for water resources authorizes the Department of State Lands to allow mitigation banks to offset adverse effects on waters of state.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2156A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2156A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2962, relating to residential housing, provides that employee who resides in dwelling unit and whose occupancy is conditional upon employment in and about dwelling's premises may be evicted only after at least 24 hours of written notice.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2962A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. House Bill 2962A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 2676, relating to tobacco products.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2676A. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, your House Committee on the Environment and Water brings you House Bill 2676. Very simply, this bill requires smokers to dispose of their cigarette, cigar, or filter in a fireproof container. Some of you may know I got my start in politics some years ago protecting a wonderful piece of nature near my home, Elk Rock Island. Elk Rock Island is a special piece of nature. It's a nature preserve. Over 60 species of birds have been known to fly over and into this island, and we have a pair of nesting bald eagles there. Recently, my husband and I went to the island to look at the blooming trillium and lilies this spring, and I was dismayed on this recent trip to see the ubiquitous cigarette butt throughout the paths on the island. We see these cigarette butts everywhere, on our streets, on our sidewalks, at stop signs, and yes, we even see them out in nature. House Bill 2676 is aimed directly at doing something about this insidious and pervasive problem. As I said, this bill requires smokers to dispose of their cigarette, cigar, or filters in a fireproof container. This type of litter creates a wide variety of negative impacts, including toxic chemicals leaching into our environment, fire hazards, children and animal ingestion, and huge costs for cleanup. I worked on this bill with Deb Schallert, a Southwest Portland resident. Deb is a former Oregon State Park ranger, and she knows personally what it's like to pick up cigarette butts in our parks and beaches. She spent time also in Japan, and she saw how the Japanese use personal ashtrays to clean up after themselves. Mr. Speaker, may I have permission to use visual aids?
Representative Tomei requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for purpose of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Tomei.
So here are a few examples of the personal ashtrays that people in Japan use. The concept is simple. Each smoker takes full responsibility for their own cigarette butts. Deb and I both believe that all Oregonians can do the same thing. A couple of weeks ago, I received a compelling statement from a woman, Allison Wallish, who is a volunteer in Portland. She's a volunteer for SOLVE, that Stop Oregon Litter and Vandalism. She said, having led 20 SOLVE cleanups in Portland area in the last 2 years, I've discovered a new invasive species, the cigarette butt. Cigarette butts are the most commonly collected item in every cleanup. She says everyone should do their part to care for the environment, and legislation could help this problem that has become an epidemic. And I agree with Allison. Some have asked me, but don't we already have anti-litter laws? Yes, we do. But these laws don't specifically address the problem of tobacco litter. Most people would never consider throwing a paper coffee cup or other litter on the ground, and yet many of these people don't blink an eye when throwing a cigarette butt on the ground. And this bill is about raising the awareness of this very serious problem. Yearly, listen to this statistic, there are over 2 billion pounds of cigarette filters discarded worldwide. 2 billion pounds. And unlike paper products, cigarette filters are not biodegradable. Nearly all cigarette filters are composed of a bundle of 12,000 plastic-like fibers, and it takes years for these fibers to decay into a powder that can't be seen. As the filters degrade, their deadly toxin, including lead, arsenic, and cadmium, are released into our environment. The nicotine trapped inside 200 used filters is sufficient to kill an adult human being. Imagine a month without rain, followed by a brief thunderstorm, and washes hundreds of thousands of nicotine-laden filters into area creeks and streams, and it's inevitable that these chemicals will infiltrate our rivers and oceans. Careless disposition of cigarettes also creates fire hazards. A butt can smolder for up to 3 hours. Nationally, annual human and property costs of fires caused by careless smoking total about $6 billion. That's in our country alone, $6 billion a year. In Oregon, cigarettes sparked over 9,000 fires between 1999 and 2005. And I'm sure you've read about this, and you may remember a motorist driving in San Diego County flicked a cigarette butt onto the center median, sparking a fire that eventually burned more than 10,000 acres, destroying 16 homes and charred 64 vehicles. And these stories are not uncommon. Cigarette butts littering the ground are not just ugly, they present a real threat to wildlife. Fish, birds, whales, and other marine creatures mistake these butts for foods. And I brought up the question of Elk Rock Island especially because, as I said, over 60 species of birds fly onto that island every year. Cigarette butts look to them like food, and they ingest it. Plastic pieces and residue are found in the stomachs of fish, birds, whales, and other marine creatures who mistake this butt for food. Within just 1 hour of contact with water, the chemicals in filters begin to leach out, threatening the well-being of all marine life. Cigarette butts, for those of you who have young children or young grandchildren, are also a problem for children who you know put anything and everything into their mouths. The toxic chemicals in cigarette butts poison our children's bodies just as they do animals and marine life. The maximum fine for an unlawful disposal of a cigarette butt is $90. And there is also an option to perform community service in lieu of the fine, and litter patrol duty is an especially appropriate sanction for this offense. Colleagues, I was asked, what would happen if the President of the United States came to Oregon? He is known to smoke a cigarette recently. And what if right in front of me he threw his cigarette on the ground? What would I do? Well, colleagues, look what I have in my hand. It's a flag of the United States imposed on a disposal. It is metal inside. It fits inside his cigarette package, or whomever carries a cigarette package, it would fit in there. And he could dispose of this, fold it up, and put it in his pocket. I've been also asked, how would this be enforced? It would be enforced just as other litter disposal is enforced. Well, colleagues, we don't need to have a tobacco litter problem in Oregon. If we enact a law stating that it is not acceptable to litter our beautiful state with butts, then public behaviors will change, and we need to raise awareness about this pervasive problem. Oregonians will get the word. If you smoke, you are responsible for your own butt. Thank you, and I urge your support of House Bill 2676.
Further discussion, Representative Girard.
Question of the carrier, Mr. Speaker.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I would be delighted to
hear
your question.
Would the good representative from Milwaukee go over again the enforcement on this?
It would be thank you for the question, Representative. It would be enforced just as other litter problems are enforced. There would be no extra enforcement would be needed. If somebody is throwing a cigarette butt out on the ground, and if it was observed by whomever would be patrolling that area, they would be given a ticket just as they would be given a ticket for any other litter.
A follow-up question, Mr.
Speaker. Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
You used the story of the President of the United States who does smoke cigarettes
occasionally
coming to Oregon. Would you, if he broke this law, make him do 60 days of community service?
Well, as I said, my answer to him would be to invite him to pick up his cigarette butt and put it in here and dispose of it legally and safely.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
We already have anti-smoking laws. I do not support smoking, but I do support smokers. I do not support littering, but I do support reducing burns in my pocket trying to comply to this law. The Smokers Caucus opposes this law. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I had testified in the committee on behalf of the good representative from Milwaukee, Southeast Portland. This bill, as stated, we have a law already where if you're distributing a lighted material out of your vehicle, obviously that's an infraction. You voted on that already. We also have fireproof or fireless cigarettes, basically fire-safe cigarettes that extinguish after time on their own. But as a firefighter, I can tell you, I'm still very concerned about the materials being distributed and tossed out of windows of the cars, ashtrays being dumped in the parking lots, parking strips along the left-hand turn lane where people sit generally for minutes at a time. And I can tell you, we've responded to 56 fires in a 30-day period on those very bark dust fires. So in the end, what I'd like to say is, you know, when we walk through this building or you're walking outside and you see a cup or a piece of paper, generally because this is our responsibility, somebody will pick that up and they'll throw it away. And schools will tell a child, hey, don't just walk by that. Pick that up and throw it away. Help beautify your area. But the one thing that I refuse to pick up is somebody else's cigarette butt. It's disgusting. I don't want to touch it. I don't want to deal with it. But what I do want is for folks to take responsibility for their own actions. Rules are for everybody, not everybody else. The bottom line is this bill, I think, with a $90 fee maximum, or the potential for them to be ordered to go do community service to include picking up cigarette butts or cigar butts, I think is delightful. I would like to see that imposed. I think it's just, I think it's fair, and I urge your aye vote.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
We are living in a state with over 12% unemployment. And we are wasting our time with this bill. We've got big problems, friends, and this is not one of them. We have anti-littering statutes. This is littering. It's ugly. It's unsightly. But it doesn't deal with the thing that we were sent here to do, major problems. Please, just vote no, and let's go on to the bigger, more important things that are before us. Thank you.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, good representative. First of all, I want to applaud the idea of this. I have a real distaste for the cigarette butts and their disposal. At my business, we are a non-smoking facility, but I find that we frequently have to clean the parking lot. When we do that, will we be breaking the law?
Thank you for asking that question, good representative. I can't imagine why you would be breaking the law.
Clarification?
Further questions? Does the carrier yield? Representative Tomei, do you yield further?
Oh, yes. Thank
you.
She
does.
Thank you. Well, because we frequently find the cigarette butts and cigars and so on in the parking lot, we're a non-smoking facility, so we'd be sweeping it up and throw it in the garbage. Would we be, the way I read this law, we'd be breaking the law.
Thank you for the question, good representative. I don't read it that way, and that was not the interpretation that we got.
Representative Hanna?
Thank you. I have a further question.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
Of course.
And again, Madam Carrier, I like your idea. I think you're missing some stuff. City street sweeper is going down the road picking up the very same items you're talking about. This bill says nothing about it being the user who is fined. It just says if you dispose of them improperly. Could the city be fined for disposing of those very same materials for not putting them in the fireproof container?
Thank you for the question, Representative. Representative, I think You maybe are misinterpreting the spirit of the law. Certainly, I think anybody who would have access to the hearing that we had in the committee, two different hearings, and the conversation today and reading the law, that it would be clear that it was whoever was smoking the cigarette or cigar that was disposing of it, they would be the ones who would be responsible for disposing of it in a safe and careful way. Certainly not the people who are picking up the butts. That certainly is not the spirit of the law.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you to the good representative from Southeast Portland. And I believe I understand the intent or the spirit of the law. I actually believe that by picking up the very materials that are being talked about, even, in fact, by those doing the community service work, if you read the law, you could be breaking the law doing the very act of community service by picking up these materials. I really believe this is the right idea. The spirit is right, but the law itself is quite flawed in its designation because it mentions nothing about this being to the user. Colleagues, I think we need to be very careful about unintended consequences of this law. I certainly would hate to be fined for cleaning up my own parking lot. Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we have really, really important work to do this session. We have to help Oregonians keep their jobs or find new jobs. And we've been doing that. We have to make sure that Oregonians who depend on the state or our local partners for services that make their lives richer, schools, health care, job training, business assistance, get that service. And we've been doing that. We have to make sure that Oregonians in every corner of this state feel safe in their homes, in their communities, on the highways. And we've been doing that. I applaud the work of our committees in addressing those urgent issues that resonate in the lives of all Oregonians. And I want to thank those who have worked together across the aisles, across the geographic divides, to make those bills possible. But that does not take one iota of importance away from the kinds of bills like this one that matter to people in their daily lives. They run into this kind of stuff much more than they run into all the conversation that we spend hours debating on this floor and in committee. This is an important bill. It matters to Oregonians. It is something that has come to us through the process of our committee work. I commend it to your attention, and you can, in fact, join me in multitasking, paying attention to this kind of important bill, as well as all the other important ones we're working on.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
This is my chair. She might make me do push-ups when this is all over.
That's right.
I'm just curious when the bill was addressed in committee, because there's two statutes that I'm familiar with, offensive littering, which is a Class C misdemeanor, and also depositing burning material upon a roadway, which is an unclassified misdemeanor. Was there any discussion at all regarding those two in connection to your bill?
Actually, the question did come up, Representative, and I do have copies of those two. Are you wanting me to quote from those?
Please.
Representative Olson.
Okay. A person commits a crime of offensive littering if the person creates an objectionable stench or degrades the beauty of appearance of property or detracts from the natural cleanliness or safety of property by intentionally discarding trash, et cetera, et cetera.
Representative Olson.
Just clarification. And that was offensive littering?
Correct.
Okay.
Representative Olson. To the bill.
There's a, from my former background, there has been a number of times, and I know many of you have seen this as well. You you stop at a stop sign, and all of a sudden there is a pile of cigarette butts in the middle of the road. It is one of the most irritating, distasteful things I ever watch and see. But it's basically a misdemeanor. Now, here's the catch, and I want to share with you. Now, I can, as a law enforcement officer, I can do one of two things. One is I can pursue that from a Class C misdemeanor, which is offensive littering. If I see it in my presence and it's still burning, I'm dealing with an unclassified misdemeanor, and it's depositing burning material on a roadway. If I never observe the offender dumping that on the roadway, I still have the ability by law to do an investigation and to take action once I determine who the offender is. The issue with this bill that we're dealing with today, because of it being a violation, I do not have that latitude. So for me, if I were still a law enforcement officer, I would have some conflict with this, even though I see that it could be a good tool. We already have two other crimes in statute right now that deal with this issue. Therefore, I will be a no regarding this vote.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I would like to close. Colleagues, this came to our attention for several different reasons. One, littering with anyone is a visual offense to all of us. And even though the littering law could be interpreted as including cigarette butts, because it has not been brought to our specific attention to specifically state that cigarette butts are a litter problem, then it is not specifically addressed by law enforcement. My husband recently saw a video of a movie made in the early 60s, and he was appalled at the littering that was done that people didn't think of. If any of you have been watching Mad Men, you will see in that film also, that also takes place in the 60s, how littering was just, people did it. You threw, if you had paper in your hand, if you were at the park and you were having a picnic and you had your picnic materials and your napkins, you threw them out in the ground. You didn't think twice about it. Our sensibilities changed some in the 60s and early 70s, and we had anti-littering laws, and we became sensitive to what that is like to degrade our environment by littering. So people don't do that anymore. As I said earlier in my testimony, that people who wouldn't think even consider throwing their coffee cup or their napkin on the ground don't think twice about putting their cigarette butt on the ground. What this bill does is brings our attention to it. It says this is wrong. It's not only affecting us visually, it also infects our health. That it's not like paper that may be going into our rivers and streams that maybe don't affect the fish and wildlife. This, we know, poisons birds, fish, whales. It is a big problem. So it's not just a visual problem, it is a poisonous problem for our wildlife and for our children. So I would urge your aye vote on this good bill. Thank you.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes no. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes no. House Bill 2676A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2539, relating to the limitation of fireworks inside cities of 300,000 or more.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2539A. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, to the bill. House Bill 2539A limits the purchase of fireworks and the use of fireworks to the time period around the 4th of July for cities over 300,000. That's essentially the city of Portland. Now, why, you may ask, are we coming to Salem regarding an issue that only affects Portland? And when we were putting this concept together, the main reason that I'm asking you to amend state law rather than doing this through city ordinance is because in conversations with the city fire marshal, the city fire marshal stated that it was more appropriate to be in state law since fireworks regulation is under the state fire marshal's purview. And it didn't make a whole lot of sense to have each municipality crafting their own regulations around fireworks when the state fire marshal is the ultimate regulator of fireworks. Currently, Oregon law restricts the sale of fireworks, not their use. This bill would prohibit the use and sale of fireworks to the period of June 30th to July 5th. Now, I appreciate the fun and patriotic nature of fireworks, but in my district, fireworks are a nightmare. They begin about 4 weeks before the 4th of July, and they end about 4 weeks after it. This affects humans and animals in the following ways. One, fireworks start fires. In committee, we heard testimony from a neighbor, Eva Kutas, who wrote the following testimony regarding her house burning down. Imagine yourself, she wrote, arriving home late one night after an out-of-state trip to visit family. Your house is dark, and there appears to be something on the lawn, maybe a car. When you look closer, you see it is a big pile of burned furniture, books, clothes, and everything else that was in your house. What remains of your roof is a bare skeleton of burned boards. I wholeheartedly support enactment of House Bill 2539, she wrote, which would limit fireworks time of sale and prohibit their use at other times of the year other than the 4th of July. I am hopeful it would reduce the likelihood of others sharing in our unenviable experience. Now, the Portland Fire Marshal asked that any closing of the window for fireworks sale and use particularly focus on shortening the time after the 4th of July, when every day that goes by results in a drier, more fire hazardous days and nights, because he knows fireworks are bad for firemen. Fireworks also in my district are confused for gunfire. In my district, unfortunately, gang crime and gunfire are far too common. The constant use of fireworks for weeks on end around the 4th and New Year make it difficult for the police and citizens to differentiate between real shots fired calls from residents and false alarm calls that are actually fireworks, not gunfire. In other words, fireworks are bad for police. Three, fireworks traumatize dogs and other pets. The Oregon Humane Society indicated their support in a letter that they submitted in testimony. Four, fireworks can traumatize our veterans. I received email from therapists who treat the men and women who have served our country in foreign wars. Fireworks can inflame combat stress and post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. Paul Evans from the governor's office testified to that. And I'll share with you a couple of sentences from a letter I received from David Collier of the VA. He wrote, "We have worked with a number of combat veterans who have reported problems with fireworks during the celebration of the 4th of July and New Year's. They have reported that the sounds are similar to rockets and mortars that were fired on them in battle. This noise can be uncomfortable and lead to other intrusive memories they experience. We will often use this information to help them normalize reactions, thoughts, feelings, and behaviors they experience during these annual activities and incorporate them into the treatment process for post-traumatic stress disorder. The group, the Returning Veterans Project, also wrote in unanimous support of the bill, as did a number of other therapists. And now, opponents of the bill have a legitimate argument in that a significant part of the problem in Portland surround illegal fireworks, most of which are brought in from Washington after being bought at the retail locations of the opponents. But I would submit that since most people don't know the law and don't distinguish between legal and illegal fireworks, we think this bill makes sense to educate the public and send a strong message to Portlanders that all fireworks can only be exploded or used from June 30th to July 5th, and remind them in a systematic way that fireworks are only allowable during this window. And again, Mr. Speaker, the reason this bill is here rather than at Portland City Council is because the Portland City Fire Marshal thought that it made more sense to have all fireworks regulated at the state level rather than to use local ordinance and piecemeal this, because fireworks regulation is the responsibility of the state fire marshal. Again, this bill only affects the city of Portland. Colleagues, I need your help. I'd appreciate your yes vote on House Bill 2539A. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, my municipality prohibits firework sale within the city limits and the use of fireworks within the city limits. That does not deter, because it is a state law, you cannot have certain fireworks in this state, but they're very dominant. We've all seen them. It does not stop that, but it's not a state issue. It's a local issue. A local municipality needs to make its own decision. It needs to make its own laws governing what it wants to have within the bounds of its own city. This is a local issue. I do not feel the state should be involved in making issue policy for what goes on within the city limits of Portland. I certainly wouldn't want the state to be governing what we do in Medford when it comes to these choices. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Shields, do you wish
good
to close?
Job. I do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, my good colleague from Medford makes a very valid point. In fact, when we were crafting this bill, we wanted to make sure that we didn't overreach and imply that what was good for Portland was also good for the rest of the state, and that's why we limited it only to the Portland area. You know, at the end of the day, sometimes you have to make a judgment call on how you proceed with an issue. Taking the city fire marshal's advice, we decided to go this path. Perhaps we could have gone another path, but I still think, you know, the question before you is, this bill on the floor today doesn't make sense. All of the Portland representatives are supportive of this, and if you could get to a yes vote on this particular bill, we sure would appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? David Edwards votes no. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer, is that a no, Representative Beyer? Thank you. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes no. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes no. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes no. Representative Jefferson Smith votes no. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes no. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Chris Edwards votes no. House Bill 2539A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2893 relating to olive oil.
Question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2893A. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After my amazing persuasive powers on that bill, I thought I would re-engage on another issue that, admittedly, when I first heard about this bill, I wasn't quite sure what the intention was and why this bill was needed. What this bill does, House Bill 2893A, is to set some standards for olive oil. And because olive oil standards do not reflect modern health and safety concerns. Now, why is this important to you and your constituents? Well, if you have a peanut oil allergy, right, imagine yourself having a peanut oil allergy and you, in good faith, buy a bottle of olive oil that you think is made 100% of olive oil. It can be a significant problem, not just for you, but also think about your kids if they have that kind of allergy. Passing this bill will help protect both olive oil consumers and producers. And yes, there are a few pioneering farmers who have shown that Oregon is a surprisingly hospitable place to grow olive oil. To grow olives. So before I talk you out of voting for this bill, Mr. Speaker, I will conclude it's a good bill, should pass. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shields, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Bruin votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. House Bill 2893A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2191, relating to debt management services and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2191A. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2191A comes from the House Committee on Consumer Protection. Colleagues, I don't know if any of you are experiencing trouble paying your debts lately, but I know many Oregonians are, and let me tell you, theoretically, I could help you. You could start taking part of your paycheck and, or as a matter of fact, maybe I could withdraw it automatically from your bank account and put it into an account, and we'll save it up, and maybe after a year, 2 years, 3 years, there'll be enough money for us to actually negotiate your debt and pay it off, and probably negotiate your debt by up to 50%. In the meantime, I'll take some fees, which may be up to 30% of your income, or maybe even a little bit more, but don't worry about that. We'll get the job done. And don't bother that I'm not regulated by any federal entity or any state entity. I am an upstanding person, and I'll make sure I treat you right. Now, colleagues, I don't know how many of you would trust me with that particular arrangement without a written contract. Maybe the representative from the Oregon's Christmas Tree District might, because he has a pretty long experience dealing with me. But, you know, many of you that don't know me may not be that comfortable doing that. Colleagues, I'm describing a situation that exists today, not just in Oregon, but throughout our country. I'm talking about debt settlement companies. Some of you who stay up late at night may have seen them advertise on TV or on radio or even on the internet telling you, if you're having debt trouble, let us help you. We'll help settle your debt and we'll negotiate it, what you owe, down by up to 50 or 60%. Colleagues, if that was always what happened, I wouldn't be standing here talking to you about this issue. In our current economic climate, Oregonians are increasingly finding themselves in growing debt, often debt they cannot afford to pay for in their current circumstances, they are over the top in trouble with debt they owe. At the same time, there has been a dramatic increase in businesses who claim to provide debt relief to consumers by selling their debts for less than the consumer owes. These debt settlement companies aggressively advertise their services on radio, television, and the internet, making sweeping claims of reducing debt from 30 to 60% and more. Unfortunately, colleagues, all too often these companies provide no relief and, in fact, drive consumers further into debt. House Bill 2191A was brought to you by the Department of Consumer Business Services as well as the House Committee on Consumer Protection. This issue came to us over the interim, and we started looking into it. We found complaints from Oregonians who were being caught in this scheme, I will call it. But let me be sure, there are legitimate industry people that do provide credit counseling, debt management, and yes, some debt settlement services. Oregonians should pay their bills. But with today's economic realities, it is important for this body to do something about companies that are aggressively advertising and soliciting consumers who have serious credit problems and actually stripping their equity away from them and not enabling to do what they wanted to do, the right thing, which is pay off their debt. House Bill 2191A is a bill to modernize the regulation of debt management groups and expand the regulatory umbrella to adapt to these kinds of businesses operating in Oregon today, including the debt management companies, the credit counselors, and now the debt settlement companies as well. The bill creates a definition of debt management service that includes these types of services, the ones that are currently regulated and the ones that I just described which are not. The bill would require debt settlement and debt elimination companies to be registered, along with the activities of persons modifying existing loans, such as mortgage loans and car loans. Other licensed or chartered persons like banks, credit unions, mortgage brokers, and Oregon licensed attorneys are excluded from this coverage. The bill requires a provider to examine a consumer's financial circumstances and determine if the provider's services would benefit the borrower. A provider would have to have a good faith belief that the program would benefit the consumer before doing any work for the consumer. The bill requires a debt management services provider to have a financial backing in the form of a bond to ensure that consumers that are harmed by a provider's violation of the law can receive damages. House Bill 2191A requires a written contract between consumers and a provider to contain certain terms and allow consumers to walk away from the agreement within 3 business days, like they do in other kinds of contracts. In addition, a consumer may also end an agreement at any time after providing 10 days written notice. This bill requires the provider to disclose important information about the services upfront to the consumer before taking any fees. These would include the warning that a consumer's credit could be damaged and creditors could still file lawsuits against the consumer to collect the money. The bill requires a provider that chooses to hold a consumer's funds for payments to creditors. They must hold that money in an account insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and sets some accounting rules. The bill prohibits misleading advertising and claims, including using symbols that would mislead a person to think that the debt management services provider is part of the local, state, or federal government. The bill also prohibits providers from claiming to be able to improve or remove parts of a person's credit history that are factually correct. The bill sets limits on the kinds of fees that a provider can charge. Representatives of the debt management industry proposed a $50 setup fee and a fee for counseling and education. This bill has those fees in it, a fee for counseling at $50 and the setup fee for $50 as well. Industry representatives also proposed capping the monthly amount of money a provider can take when receiving money to pay a consumer's creditors. Under this bill, regardless of whether a consumer submits funds to a debt management company to pay creditors or put funds in a separate account to pay off creditors as directed by the debt settlement company, the bill caps the fees the provider can collect to $65 per month. In addition, when a provider is in the business of negotiating a lower amount of debt for a consumer to pay off, the company may charge 7.5% of the amount the company saves for the consumer, or in other words, the amount of the debt the consumer had subtracted from what the consumer ended up paying to the creditors. Colleagues, this bill also provides enforcement tools for the Department of Consumer and Business Services, including authority to investigate and examine operations and the ability to deny, suspend, revoke, or place conditions on a provider's license, and assess civil penalties up to $5,000 for violations. The bill also allows consumers that can prove a loss because of the conduct of a debt management service provider to sue the company and allows the Attorney General to enforce Oregon's Unfair Trade Practices Act for some acts. This will enable the Attorney General to go after debt settlement companies that are breaking the law when they are actually operating in another state. This bill received substantial input from debt management industry associations, debt settlement industry associations, consumer advocates, and others. In terms of allowable fees, this bill was not a consensus product. Other technical fixes suggested by representatives of the debt management industry and others could not be completed in time, but the department pledged to offer technical fixes in the Senate. Colleagues, this is a good bill. It's time for us to stand up for Oregonians who find themselves in trouble like this and help protect them from unscrupulous, predatory practices that need to be contained in Oregon. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I had gone to the chair of our committee and explained to him I was going to be changing my vote, and there's a couple reasons. One, when we talked to the people that came and testified regarding the services that they provided, it was obvious that some of them did a lot more for those people than others did. Some of them did the financial counseling. That was in person in an office. Some of them met weekly with their people. That's four times a month they would meet with them about their family budget and see where they were. They do a lot more than just negotiate a reduced settlement that they might be involved in. We were talking a while ago about the first bill we heard about prevailing wage. My plumber cost me $75 an hour. These people are going to be putting a whole lot more time in than my plumber is for that 1 hour's work, and he's going to get paid $75. I think you're going to see some of these people not be able to continue this type of work or at least give the quality of service that some of them are. The rest of the bill, I think, gets at some of the bad players, but the cap was too low, and we didn't distinguish between those that different types of services that they provided. So I'll be a no vote.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Well, first of all, I'm going to need these services, so I'm against this bill. I'm going to need them after my debt to the Smokers Caucus on the butt bill, but that's another subject. I never doubt the motives of the chair of our Consumer Protection Committee. This is my second service on that committee. He wants to protect consumers, and he wants to make Oregon a better place to do business. But sometimes we can, in our zeal, overstep our bounds, and this bill, in my opinion, is exactly one of those cases. So I urge your no vote. I urge it because this is not the typical overregulation wine that I have served from time to time. This is outright elimination. The cap, as already has been addressed in an earlier speech, is way too low. This goes way too far and wipes out the entire industry. I don't think it's a flash when we think there are people in the state preying on people who are in debt, people who are in trouble. But when we come in after the fact and overstep our bounds and wipe out all the actors, good and bad, we make a big mistake. This isn't just a fix it in the Senate. This is fatally flawed, and we shouldn't even send it out of this House. I'm all for protecting folks who are being preyed upon. I'm all for stopping the practices that make it worse on people who are already in a world of hurt. But I am not for wiping out an entire industry with a cleverly written cap. I urge your no vote. Thank you.
Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I rise to lend a voice of support to House Bill 2191A. So often, our experiences will determine how we vote on an issue. And I'd like to share with you a little bit about my experience, and that is I serve as a commercial lender as part of my professional background. And I tend to work with hundreds of small business owners every year, primarily helping them access capital. And in the course of this experience, I've made loans as small as $500, and I've assisted on bonding projects upwards of $200 million. And I've seen everything in between. Quite often when I work with small business owners, there tends to be credit issues that arise. And I wish I could say every small business owner I've worked with had excellent credit, but that is not the case. Quite often, small business owners will come to me during a time of crisis. And during that time of crisis, they tend to be overwhelmed by the situation that they're facing. They tend to be looking for an easy solution. They tend to be looking for quick fixes. What I would share with you from a personal experience is I think few things could be sadder than when vulnerable citizens are taken advantage of. House Bill 2191A, do I think it is a perfect bill? No. Have I yet to see a bill come across the House floor in five terms of service that I think is perfect? No. Do I think it addresses an issue that needs to be addressed? Yes. I want to share one thought with you. This bill is stepping up to support the reputable companies who are operating in the state of Oregon. House Bill 2191A is stepping up and providing legitimacy to an industry. Now, those who speak out in opposition and will hold the free enterprise banner up, well, that's your option. That's my option. What I would share with you, though, is there are predators out there that want to take advantage of the most vulnerable, and some of those most vulnerable are those who are in a financial crisis. House Bill 2191A goes a long ways towards assisting those most vulnerable Oregonians, and I think it's a good step. I will be casting an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Colleagues, this is really an important bill, and I'd just like to address a few items that came up. You know, the issue of the caps and the fees was the contention mostly in this bill, but frankly, those suggestions came from many of the industry that participated in discussions and the work group. I'll point out there's a floor letter on your desk, and if you'd indulge me just a moment, because I know when I get a stack of floor letters like I have today, I don't normally read them all, but I'm going to read you this one because it's from Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Coos Bay, or of Coos Curry. And it says, I am writing to express our support of House Bill 2191A. This bill will provide consumer protection from exorbitant fees and deceptive practices within the debt management and debt settlement services sector. Our counselors have talked with many Oregon consumers who have serious credit problems and have been harmed by unscrupulous companies that are not currently regulated under Oregon laws. It is imperative that consumers obtain protection from such actions. The new regulations set forth in House Bill 2191 will provide necessary caps on fees, full disclosures, and prevention of false or misleading advertising and solicitation. I urge all representatives of our Oregon consumers to vote in favor of House Bill 2191A. Colleagues, we had many different organizations testifying and in the work group. Money Management International, the Consumer Credit Counseling Service, which I just read from, and the American Association of Debt Manager Organizations, who all supported the fee structure in this bill. Quite frankly, they were involved in designing it. There were two organizations that opposed the fee structure, the Association of Settlement Companies and the United States Organizations for Bankruptcy Alternatives. And colleagues, these two particular organizations, though sometimes perhaps offer good services, we had evidence presented to our committee and to myself and documentation from our state agencies against these companies involved with these two organizations. A constituent from Lane County, Devin Pearson, 23 years old, a single mother, working at $9 an hour, trying to do the right thing. Her employer said, we looked at your credit report. You've got all this debt. You need to do something about it. It's going to become a problem. She went online, got a phone number, no contract, no anything. Next thing she knows, she's having $300 deducted from her bank account, all in the name of saving up enough money and we're going to pay off your debt. We're going to negotiate your debt after you get enough money, as a matter of fact, in this count, probably down by 50%. What a great deal. I want to do the right thing, and this sounds like the best opportunity I could possibly have. What happens next? 8 months later, you know how much money was in that account for her to pay off her debt? $300. All the rest of it went out in fees. Colleagues, that's egregious. That shouldn't be allowed to happen. You know what happened to that young woman with a child? Next thing, and they were telling her all the time, don't contact your creditors. We'll do that. Ignore your bills. Well, she got her wages garnished. Guess what? She can't afford to pay the rent anymore. She ended up in a worse financial situation than when she started. She's trying to save up enough money today so she can file bankruptcy. Similar story from Fred Lockhart from Kaiser, one of the same companies that was testifying in our committee. Exact same thing. They didn't do anything for him. They didn't contact any creditors, but they sure as heck took all the money and all the fees. He ended up getting his wages garnished. He ends up owing He ended up owing $20,000 instead of just over $14,000. He's in worse financial shape than when he started. And did they contact any creditors? No. Did they pay off any of his debts? No. But they sure as heck took those upfront fees and made their profit so they could go on to the next one. I'm sure there's a success story with some of these companies. but doggone it, it shouldn't be at the expense of many people who are, they are failing. Colleagues, I asked when we talked about this bill and the fee structure, I asked these organizations that were opposing the fee structure, what the heck services do you provide to consumers on a monthly basis? You're allowed to do the $50 setup fee, the $50 for the counseling up front, and now you can charge $65 a month as well. What do you do for consumers on an ongoing monthly basis until you're ready to negotiate and pay off their debt? I asked them that in the work groups. I asked them that in committee. Oh, we do a lot of hand-holding. I got absolutely no answer to my questions. We have legitimate industry people who say, hey, $50 a month is enough to do, to carry out and take care of people. Counseling, to help them pay off their debts, to get them set up on a program. And in fact, these debt settlement companies, if in fact they're providing a value to the consumer, they provide that value at the tail end when they actually successfully pay off that debt. And that's why the bill allows them to take 7.5% of the amount they reduced, because that's what they were promising. We'll reduce your debt. Well, if they reduce it, they can get 7.5% off of what they reduced it by. So they're getting paid for the value that they're giving to consumers. But frankly, they aren't providing a value to that consumer on a monthly basis, telling them not to contact your creditors. Wait for your wages to get garnished, you know? Where are you then? Colleagues, we need to pass this bill. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Van Orman votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 2191A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. House will stand at ease for a moment. Actually, let's Representative Garrett, for what purpose do you rise?
Speaker, I'd like to return to courtesies, please.
Representative Garrett, request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. I'd like to welcome 39 fifth graders from my district at Riverdale Elementary School. They're in the upper gallery. Please welcome them to the House.
Welcome to the House. Good to have you here. Further courtesies, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Two things. First of all, I have cousins that go to that school. I don't see you, but if you're up there, hi. I'd like to acknowledge my constituent, Jeanette Chaffee, who is here. She's just here from Tualatin visiting today and a big proponent of the community colleges. Welcome, Jeanette.
Further courtesies, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm proud to welcome to the Capitol 75 fourth grade students from East Gresham Grade School. They are, I believe, in the rotunda right now. Some of them may still be up there, but East Gresham Grade School, great to see you. Actually, the school I attended, Mr. Speaker, so great to have them in the Capitol. Welcome.
Welcome. House will stand at ease for a moment. Oh, further courtesies. I'm sorry, Representative Smith. I'm not trying to exclude you. Representative
Mr. Speaker,
Smith.
I'm just wasting everyone's time. I apologize. And the East Gresham Eagles are the home of
Representative Smith as well. So it's good having those folks here. I apologize, colleagues, for this interruption.
No, you're doing an appropriate time filler. House will stand at ease for a moment. So, colleagues, we are going to do one motion, carry some bills over, and then do one more resolution, and then we'll have time for caucuses. So the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2184B be considered immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2184, relating to beverage containers.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2184B. Representative Cannon.
Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 2184B be referred to the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Cannon moves that House Bill 2184 be referred to the Committee on Revenue. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, despite all the good work that's been done on this bill and despite my attempt to bribe you all with beautiful drinks, it's come to our attention that there's a revenue issue related to this bill. Simply put, there is $20 to $30 million a year in unredeemed deposits, deposits paid by the people of Oregon that are kept by the distributors. We want to give the Revenue Committee an opportunity to look at this issue, investigate this issue, decide how to proceed forward, especially given the budget situation we're facing. I think it's worth giving them this opportunity, and I urge an aye vote on this motion.
So the discussion is on the motion to refer to the Committee on Revenue. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cannon, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that House Bill 2184 should be referred to the Committee on Revenue will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boone, how do you vote? Boone votes no. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Representative Barker, excuse for business of the House. My apologies. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2184 is referred to the Committee on Revenue. The chair requests unanimous consent that the remaining bills on today's third reading of House Bills calendar be carried over until the third reading calendar on Wednesday, May 6, 2015.
2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that HJM 15 be carried over to the final reading, memorials and resolutions calendar on Wednesday, May 6, 2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next resolution.
HJR 21, designating Jory Soil as official state soil.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of HJR 21. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request permission to use two visual aids, please.
Representative Greenlick requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for purposes of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Greenlick.
First, colleagues, today we're going to talk about Jory Soil. And what I have in front of you is some Jory Soil liberated from the parking lot of Enchanted Forest, just down the road a piece. In 1990, the Soil Society of America requested each state soil society nominate a state soil, so a characteristic of that state. It was to help create an exhibit in the Smithsonian Institution about state soils. The Oregon Soil Society worked 2 years to create a state soil, and the criteria they used to create it was three. It needed to cover a large area of the state, it needed to have many crops growing in it, and it needed to have a story. Well, Jory Soil was selected in that, and in fact, down in our rotunda, there's an exhibit that includes Jory Soil explaining why. First of all, it covers 300,000 acres in the state of Oregon. Second of all, it has many crops growing in it. Christmas trees, orchards, berries, tree farms, hazelnuts, grass, wheat, and grapes. And in fact, the first courtyard in modern Oregon wine history was created on Jory Soil. But the story is what's most interesting. And I'm reading from the letter you have on your desk from Portland State Professor Scott Burns. It's a very old soil, over a million years in age, hence the very red color. It is a sign of stability. It also unites both the eastern and the western parts of the state, which is very important to the soil scientists. It is developed mainly on the Columbia River basalt, which all came from northeast Oregon, but it is weathered in the western Oregon climate. This soil was first described on the Jory Farm in South Salem Hills, just south of here, so it's found at the edges of our state capital. It is in the Smithsonian. Our Speaker Pro Tem brought a picture of the Jory Soil, of the Oregon soil, the Jory soil exhibited in the Smithsonian. Over 20 states have validated their state's soil scientists' choice for their state soil, and I urge you today to join in that validation and vote yes on House Joint Resolution 21 to name Jory Soil as the state soil. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to vote for the resolution.
The resolution.
Personally, I think it should be the state soil should be gravel.
Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A brief question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'm delighted to yield.
Thank you. Would passage of this resolution confer any rights upon Jory soil that would not be enjoyed by other soils in the state of Oregon?
No rights, but only obligations in this case. Jory soil is a state soil. It would have to work hard to make us proud of the products grown in it.
Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Greenlick, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Votes aye. HJR 21, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's final reading, memorials and resolutions calendar, be carried over to its proper place on the Wednesday, May 6, 2009, final reading, memorials and resolutions calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 70 relating to amounts received from state school fund by Department of Education to declare an emergency. Senate Bill 72 relating to special education to declare an emergency. Senate Bill 269 relating to relocation of utility facilities. Senate Bill 309 relating to evidence. Senate Bill 310 relating to dextropyrogenic acid and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 566 relating to urban growth boundary management in metropolitan service districts and declaring an emergency. And prescribing an effective date, excuse me. Senate Bill 577 relating to certification of appeal to the Supreme Court and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 580 relating to Columbia River Crossing Project. Senate Bill 590 relating to State Interoperability Executive Council. Senate Bill 664 relating to pilot project for temporary transfer of water rights. Senate Bill 731 relating to garnishment. Senate Bill 735 relating to Oregon Prescription Drug Program and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 839 relating to address confidentiality. Senate Bill 850 relating to the Health Services Commission. Senate Bill 874 relating to individuals with disabilities. Senate Bill 915 relating to regulation of structure. Senate Bill 916 relating to local government budgets. Senate Bill 944 relating to Lane County Area Commission on Transportation. Senate Bill 970 relating to state real property.
Bills read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business to the House. Other business to the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats will caucus at noon in the caucus room. Noon, please.
Further announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to extend congratulations today to Wilsonville High School's Athletic Director, Mike Henderson, who was awarded the Big School Class 5A Athletic Director of the Year Award. According to the Wilsonville spokesman, the criteria is not simply based on an athletic program steeped in a winning tradition. It's about sportsmanship and developing kids into young adults and running a program the right way. Mike Henderson was recognized for his enthusiasm and hard work. He said, Wilsonville's quest for excellence is based on the four A's, academics, arts, activities, and athletics. According to Mr. Henderson, we've got a great group of coaches that really care about the kids first and put the kids above winning. Wilsonville was awarded the Sportsmanship Award in the Class 5A Northwest Oregon Conference for this past winter's season, as voted on by the coaches and school administrators from the league member schools. Last year, Henderson was also awarded the first ever OSAA-OADA Partnership Award, as Wilsonville High School has accommodated state championship games and playoff games in soccer and football. Referee training for basketball, football, and softball are also held at Wilsonville High School. Colleagues, congratulations to the athletes and staff of Wilsonville High School, and congratulations to their athletic director, Mike Henderson.
Any further remonstrances? Representative Jensen, adjournment.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 6, 2009.
And you'll note that Representative Jensen has moved to adjourn until 10 a.m., not 10:15 as was previously announced. Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. on Wednesday, May 6, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.